Ask people from other parts of the country what Oregon is famous for, and one of the most frequent answers is trees. They grow big in Oregon, and our big old trees have certainly been the center of huge debates over the proper use of those trees. Leave them standing or cut them down and make lumber out of them. The debate is acknowledged as part of a much larger perspective in a new book called Oregon's Ancient Forests, a hiking guide. It's the work of Chandra Legue, who is the Western Oregon Field Coordinator for Oregon Wild. She's based in Eugene, and if I just slaughtered your name, please correct me, Chandra.
Oh, no, it was fine. Thank you.
Okay. So, wow, Oregon is divided into 14 zones for the book. Does that mean there's a lot of old growth left?
You know, I wouldn't say a lot. The proportions are, you know, estimated to be in the 15-20% range of what was once here. But that doesn't mean that there aren't still really beautiful forests to hike in. So, I tried to capture all of those forests from all of the different regions across the state and all the different forest types, which are really diverse across Oregon.
You are truly following in the footsteps of Wendell Wood with this book. Tell us the story of Wendell and how he set the ground for this.
Sure. Well, Wendell Wood was one of Oregon Wild's longest-serving volunteers and staff people. He was a phenomenal naturalist and a fierce advocate for forests, the Klamath River Basin, and wild places everywhere. In 1991, after a few years of work, he published a book called A Walking Guide to Oregon's Ancient Forests. And it came at a time when our public lands agencies were still clear-cutting our old-growth forests across the state, and there was still very much a need to put a stop to that and protect these ecosystems. So Wendell thought, hey, I'll help introduce people to these beautiful places and seek their help in our effort to protect the remaining forests that we have. And so he published that book, and, you know, it was almost 30 years ago, and a lot has changed. Technology, imagery, the way that people use guides, and there's a lot of new people in Oregon. So I took on the task of sort of using that book as a guide for my own modern version, and to pay homage to all the work that Wendell and many other forest advocates put into protecting these places over the years. Wendell passed away just a few years ago.
It's a very comprehensive book. I mean, we get quite a bit about the controversy about old growth ecosystems, but then, you know, there's the hiking details too. You know, this is not a chapter that is closed by any means. Opal Creek and some other areas of high value ancient forest got protection just a few months ago under a new law. Did that law leave some prime targets for protection still unprotected?
Oh, certainly. The sort of ultimate protection for some of our forests comes in the form of wilderness, which I think is what you're referring to. Just back in February,
right,
Congress passed new wilderness for the Devil Staircase area in the Coast Range, as well as some other wild and scenic rivers protections. But Oregon Wild and other groups across the state have identified many more ancient forests and other wild lands that still deserve that type of protection. And without that, or you know, some other layer of sort of administrative or legislative protection, some of these forests are still at risk, even though we have so few left.
We're talking again about Oregon's ancient forests with Chandra Legue from the Oregon Wild Group. She's the Western Oregon Field Coordinator based in Eugene. There is a guide to ownership and management, and of course, it got in Western Oregon in particular, some BLM lands that contain old growth forest, Forest Service land, of course. Is there anything on private land, really, in the way of ancient forest?
No, other than, you know, people who may have some small forests left in their, you know, their backyards, their small properties. For the most part, most of our privately owned forests in Oregon have been logged, sometimes many times at this point. You know, it's just been, you know, there have been a lot of large company landowners as well as today investment firms that own a lot of the productive forest lands in Oregon. And the primary purpose for those lands have generally been to produce timber. And so we have very, very little old growth forest left on private lands. We really just find it on public lands, which for hiking is really nice because that means you have public access.
So, Chandra, for people who've never been in an ancient forest, for whom the concept is nearly mythical, what's it like in there?
Well, if you love sort of the shade of green the many shades of green. Sometimes, if you enjoy, you know, experiencing lots of smells and sounds of the forest, you can really find it all in these ancient forests. There's such diversity. There's huge living trees. There's large dead trees. There's trees that have fallen to the ground and are rotting but giving birth to new life. There's birds and, you know, chipmunks and snakes and, you know, just all sorts of biodiversity. And like I said, if you enjoy those sorts of things, like I clearly do, they're just really great places to explore. You know, it's ancient forests are places you can stand in awe of the natural world.
Well, and certainly with not just your eyes, but your nose as well, there's a great description you provide in the book where you say everything smelled fresh and dirty and old at the same time.
And it's true. If you've ever been out there, especially in, you know, some of Western Oregon's wetter forests, I think that's where you have that experience where, you know, things like moss and dirt really inundate the senses.
I've heard people who know and love old growth forests say that it's messy. I mean, what are some of the features you'll find in ancient forests?
Oh, yeah, messy for sure. And as I said, really diverse. Every few steps that you take on one of these hiking trails, you might look around and experience something very different. But yeah, those down logs, trees that have died and fallen over and then have, you know, maybe some baby hemlocks or salal or huckleberries growing out of them. So there's all these different layers as you look through these forests often. And nothing really stays put in any one, you know, neat way. Just visually, that's really striking. And I know some people find it a little claustrophobic, but I find it really interesting.
Not the neat rows of trees you expect from a tree farm, for example.
Exactly.
You're not going to find that in Oregon's Ancient Forest. That is the name of the book, Oregon's Ancient Forests, a hiking guide. Chandra Legue, the Western Oregon Field Coordinator for Oregon Wild. She's based in Eugene, but she got all over the state of Oregon to recreate a work that Wendell Wood made in the early 90s in a new way. It's called Oregon's Ancient Forests, a hiking guide, where there are 14 different zones of the state you can go to visit ancient forests of different types. You can join the conversation on The Exchange, share stories about hikes in ancient forests, ask questions of our guest, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So there is not a one-size-fits-all ancient forest, is that right, Chandra? You're going to find different ecosystems, different tree species, that sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, many of us in Western and Southern Oregon are familiar with Douglas fir forests or, you know, our coastal forests or, you know, a lot of conifers in the mountains. But as you go into Eastern Oregon, you get into those more open ponderosa pine type forests with aspen and species like that mixed in. Or, I mean, even in, you know, along the Siskiyou Crest, there's a lot of live oak and madrone and, broadleaf evergreen trees that you don't find anywhere else in the state. So, yes, each region is distinct in the types of trees that it has and the experiences that you can have there.
The hiking portion of the book begins at the North Coast with hikes for Tillamook Head, Cape Falcon, Cape Lookout, and Munson Creek Falls. I mean, are we talking some seriously damp experiences to be had if you hit the wrong day?
Well, if you pick the wrong day, but at the same time, hiking in ancient forests in the rain gives you a different perspective. You can see how those forests capture the rain and how the soils filter the water instead of letting it all run out. And so if you're interested in learning new things, like that before taking off on your hike, this book offers some of that information. So you can appreciate it in a different way in all different types of weather.
Well, like any hiking book, this one has lots of pictures. And when I look at some of the pictures on the North Coast in particular, I think that some of these places were not logged just because logging was nearly impossible.
That is absolutely true. Some of the steep slopes of the Coast Range prevented that, and that's why there are still some really huge Sitka spruces left. And, you know, I mentioned earlier the newest wilderness area in Oregon, the Devil's Staircase Wilderness. That's 26,000 acres in prime, you know, timber-growing land, if you're thinking about it that way, in the Coast Range. And it wasn't logged because it's so steep. It's really, really rugged. And lucky for all of us and the wildlife that call it home, it's now permanently protected.
There is an aside on Devil's Staircase in the book as well. What are some of the features of that area that make it so attractive for protection, which it got this year?
Well, again, it was 26,000 acres that has only one road that went through it, which is now closed, simply because of the terrain. And so that really leaves that natural feel to the whole place. And it really was the last largest intact block of forest left in the Coast Range. And that's incredibly unique. Most of our forests, especially in the Coast Range, have been severely fragmented, broken up into teeny pieces where that really the ecosystem functions can't occur. That water filtration, the healthy soils, the wildlife habitat. So it's very special and wild in that way, and hopefully will remain so.
The Central Coast, you mentioned, gets like 100 inches of rain a year. How big are some of those trees?
Well, one in the Devil's Staircase Wilderness, for example, I've taken a group out and had about 10 people try to fit their arms around it. 10, 11, 12 feet in diameter, including, the redwoods and the very southern tip of the Oregon coast, down by sort of the Gold Beach area. Some of those redwoods are, maybe not approaching the size that you're familiar with in California, but still really giant trees because of the nature of the growing conditions there.
As you get down to Gold Beach, we're talking about the South Coast now, which is combined in a chapter in the book with the Kalmiopsis Wilderness Area. There are some challenges to forests in this region, you say.
Yeah, there are. There's some invasive species that have moved in that are pathogens to some of our native trees, like Port Orford cedar and tan oak. So that's one of them. As you all know, in Southern Oregon, there it's a more fire adapted ecosystem. Fires are more frequent, and that can be seen as a challenge to maintaining forests. But at the same time, fire is really a rejuvenating force in Oregon's forests, and so they might not offer the most lush experience for hiking, but you could get to see the recovery and some of the trails from fires that have burned in the past.
Now, you point out that not all old trees are the kind that tower above us, and this brings us back to the South Coast again. Tell us about the Lobster Creek Myrtle Grove.
Oh, yeah. If folks haven't been to the Lobster Creek Myrtle Grove, it's well worth a little side trip. It's just across the Lobster Creek Bridge on the Lower Rogue River, and it's a short little trail. Myrtle trees are just like ants in mythical terms. They're really twisted and have really interesting forms, and that's what you experience when you hike through that nearly pure myrtlewood grove. And it's just really kind of a special elfin experience.
Also on the South Coast, you and Kalmiopsis, you bring us to Babyfoot Lake, which is one place you give a warning to hikers about the sensitivity of the place. And then I guess that needs to be said about a lot of these places, to be careful what you do in there.
Oh, yeah. Sort of following leave no trace principles is really important for any outdoor experience. But especially in areas that have burned, it means that the soils are a little bit more fragile because they are recovering. And on the trail to Babyfoot Lake, it's long been a destination into the Kalmiopsis Wilderness that's absolutely stunning, even after the Biscuit Fire. And so, it's just good to stay on the trail, not create your own, not camp right next to the water, things like that, to make sure that the trees there and the experience that everyone gets to have is preserved.
Chandra Legu is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the Western Oregon Field Coordinator for the group Oregon Wild, based in Eugene. She's written a book called Ancient Forests, A Hiking Guide, published by Mountaineers Books with the support of Oregon Wild. You can join our conversation about old growth forests and places to find them in Oregon. There are 14 different zones indicated in the book, and we've gotten to three of them so far. You can join our conversation on the Exchange. Questions, comments, welcome at 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. And here's a call from Vince in Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
Hi, thanks for the valuable information. I'd like to know if there are any areas in the Southern Oregon forested trails for people with disabilities. We're in our early 70s, lots of arthritis, bad knees, and we find some trails really difficult to manage for more than half mile to a mile. And we are thinking of a vacation later this summer in the Gold Beach area. Mm-hmm. Any information you can share with that?
All right. Good question. Thanks for that, Vince.
Yeah, that is a great question. You know, the hikes in this book definitely range in difficulty levels, but I definitely purposefully included some of the hikes that were on the easier side so that they could be more accessible. A few in the area and on the South Coast that I would recommend would be the Schrader Old Growth Grove. That is also really near the Myrtle Creek or Myrtle Tree Grove along Lobster Creek and the Lower Rogue River. That's only about a mile and is relatively gentle and absolutely stunning. Fairly easy to access in your car. And then the Redwood Nature Trail that's near the Chetco River, just upstream from Brookings, is also a one-mile trail that is pretty accessible, and you can take your time. In fact, I would recommend taking your time. That's a good way to take a break and just marvel at the giant trees and all the diversity around you.
Was it Schrader Grove? Oh, there it is. I see it now.
Schrader Old Grove.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I think I've been there myself, and it's a pretty easy walk around. The as we move away from the South Coast and Kalmiops, as we move into the Siskiyou Crest, these hikes get their own chapter. And I had to wonder, with the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument designation, larger and then potentially smaller, if you had to hold off on writing parts of this chapter.
Yeah, that is one thing that changes, I wouldn't say constantly, but periodically, with forest management and levels of protection, it gets political. And, you know, the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument was expanded towards the end of Obama's tenure, and then that's been challenged in court. Luckily, it doesn't look like the shrinkage of that monument is going to happen, and so I felt comfortable you know, keeping in the description of some of those hikes, like Grizzly Peak, just outside of Ashland, that is part of the expanded monument and looks to remain that way.
There's a fair number of surprises in the book, and one of them for me was to read that there were actually very few bits of old growth along the Pacific Crest Trail.
Yeah, well, part of that is because the Pacific Crest Trail, lies at some higher elevations. And, you know, also this hiking guide is not comprehensive, Jeff, so there are some some secrets still left out there on the trail, but some of it has been logged. Along in the Siskiyou Crest, the parts of the Pacific Crest Trail included don't have a ton of old growth left, in part because of the mixed ownership in southern Oregon, so the mixture of BLM, private land, and Forest Service land along the PCT. Contributed to a lot of it being logged.
The Siskiyou Crest chapter gives way to Poof, 300 miles north. We're at Mount Hood now. And how different a landscape is that from either where we just were in the Siskiyou Crest or from any other place in Oregon?
Oh, Mount Hood is a special ecosystem. That mountain really impacts the water, you know, the streams that are flowing off of it, and the weather on all the different sides. So there's on the west side, you know, some of the classic sort of Douglas fir, red cedar rainforest along the Salmon River. And then on the east side, in that same region, is 15 Mile Creek, which has ponderosa pine and Oregon white oak, and is a much different, drier experience because of the rain shadow of the mountain.
Okay, so you're basically making a transition from west side to east side right on the flanks of one mountain.
Exactly.
Wow. And so closer to Portland, as Mount Hood is, are you likely to have more company on some of these hikes?
Absolutely. When I did the research for the book, which, you know, was terrible, of course.
Of course.
I got to have a lot of alone time, especially in places in eastern Oregon where there's just not as many people making that adventure. So around Mount Hood, I had a lot more company, especially more developed places like Lost Lake, which is absolutely stunning, but you're going to have company. It's a resort. That's fine. It's kind of nice to encounter other people who are out enjoying the outdoors.
You mentioned doing the research for the book, which meant you probably had to hike all these places, or at least step in them briefly. Did you find, as you did your research, that some areas were very different from what Wendell Wood had described in his early 90s hiking guide to ancient forests?
Yeah, that's a great question that I hear a lot, because, you know, it is 30 years later, and Wendell's book had a certain, you know, came at a certain time when we were fearful of losing all of our remaining ancient forests. You know, I would say that the primary difference was that a lot of places had burned. Fires are, a natural part of forest ecosystems, and they've happened over 30 years. And so I did experience some places that had changed dramatically. Some of those were recovering nicely, you know, with new understory growing up, but some had been logged after the fire burned, and those look pretty much like they're never coming back. It does so much damage. So we definitely lost some of the beautiful places that Wendell talked about.
Chandra Legu is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her more recent version of a hiking guide for old growth areas is called Oregon's Ancient Forests, a Hiking Guide. We're moving eastward now, and I want to ask how different those ancient forests are east of the Cascades from the drippy places on the west side.
Mm-hmm. They're quite different. The transition from Douglas fir and hemlock with the moist understory and the moss and lichen really changes as you go over the crest due to the geography. So ponderosa pine becomes more dominant. And I think a lot of people picture that, those large orange bark trees with a sparse understory, and they're more widely spaced. But, you know, really what's different about those forests east of the Cascades is that they're different in all sorts of little micro ways. And so the flat sort of lower elevation areas might have those ponderosa pine forests I just talked about, but along streams or in steeper slopes or, you know, on a north-facing slope, things change dramatically. And so there's a lot more sort of, mile-by-mile diversity, I guess, across that landscape.
Chandra, there's an aside in the book on the patchwork landscape out there from places that have been cut and not. We've certainly heard plenty over the years about the difficulty for animals to get from an island of timber to the next island, but you're saying there's impacts on the trees, too.
Yeah, there is. Trees, have been shown to share nutrients and through the soil, and fragmentation through roads or cutting of trees nearby can impact that sort of uptake of nutrition and water. It can change, that fragmentation can change the way that wind moves through a forest, and so it might, dry out a forest that where the plants aren't really adapted to that because it's more open around it. Yeah, there are a lot of impacts.
There's a underground connectivity between plants and more, and here's where we get back into the old growth discussion of how the ecosystems work. But what is it that connects everything underground?
Well, it's tiny little fragments or filaments that connect fungi, called mycorrhizal fungi, that are essentially the root system of all the fungus that live out there. So all the mushrooms that we see, primarily in the fall or in the form of conchs that grow out of dead trees, those are just the fruiting bodies of fungus that live out in the forest. But it's really the most of the mass is actually underground in the soil. And those mycorrhizal fungi not only feed those mushrooms, but have symbiotic microscopic relationships with tree roots and other vegetation that kind of bind it all together.
So it's not just a matter of you got these trees living in a forest and these animals living in a forest. You got the forest sort of living as an entity in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty fascinating.
So got a few places here where there's no official trail. What do you recommend for hikers in those cases?
I tried not to include too many of those places that don't have an official trail, just to keep things more accessible. But I would say that, one of the key tips if you're on a trail that maybe isn't maintained or isn't official is really just to watch your step. It takes a little bit more care to navigate around some of the down logs and care into not stepping on some of the, wildflowers, in wetter areas, just to help preserve some of the the plants and streams and things like that. So just treading carefully.
Well, that is a good guide all overall. The book is called Oregon's Ancient Forest, a hiking guide. It's the work of Chandra Legu, who is the Western Oregon Field Coordinator for Oregon Wild, based in Eugene. Thank you so much for the book and for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about it.
Oh, very much my pleasure.